Welcome to the Intuitive Eating and Body Positivity Podcast. I'm Terry and I'll be talking about all things intuitive eating, body positivity and health at every size, and shaking off weight stigma, diet culture and food rules so that we can all have a better relationship with food and our bodies. Outside, it is grim. It is raining, it is cold, it is windy, it is winter, it is not spring. But in the recording studio, it's gloriously sunny and warm because I'm with Charlie. How'd you like that?
I love it.
Charlie.
Hey, Terry.
Hi. It was like the best intro ever or what?
Yeah, completely.
So Charlie Garnham, we're going to have a chat today about human design and how that relates to how we choose to approach eating behaviors and things like that. It's very vague because we're going to see where the conversation goes. But Charlie, you are a human design expert, and this is going to be something new for a lot of people. Maybe some people have dipped their toes in a little bit, but it's going to be so interesting. So tell everybody who you are and what you do, because you'll do it way better than I will.
Yay. Thanks, Terry. Okay. So let's start off with who I am. So hi, everybody. My name's Charlie. Thank you very much for that wonderful sunny introduction. And if you're watching, then yeah, you can see that I put on my brightest jumper this morning because it's so disgusting out there. Oh, it's really horrible. There's even snow down here, by the way.
No.
There's snow. Can you believe it? Oh well. So I am a human design expert, and I've been studying the system for over 4 years now, and human design is literally the most fascinating thing that I think I've ever come across, which is why I do it for a living and I absolutely love to do it.
It is. It's fast. I don't know anywhere near enough about it, but every time I listen to you talk or I see something come up on my feed or, you know, whatever it is, I'm like, oh, it's so interesting. Okay, let's start there then. Do you want to explain a bit about human design for people who know absolutely nothing about it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So human design's really trendy at the moment. So you may have heard of it already. If you have heard the name, you may not even know what it is, though, because it is kind of complicated to explain. It's just like nothing out there ever. But essentially, the way that I like to describe it is it's what's called the science of differentiation, which essentially means it is a system whereby you can understand yourself and your true self, but also what makes you different. So the differentiation part is the really sort of like key, unique, individual person of who you are. And I do like to explain that it is a little bit like a personality test, but it's for your soul more than your mind to do, you know, answer the questions, etc. Because the system is actually based on your time and place of birth, which makes it very, very unusual. You may feel as though that's, it's a little bit skeptical. And believe me, I was skeptical with it as well. But when you realize the magic within the human design system and the magic within your own human design body graph, it's almost like you forget that it's based on your time and place of birth, and you just kind of lean into it and go, wow, this is really accurate. This is really amazing. And you can go really, really deep with it as well. So yeah, how was that for an explanation of human design?
Yeah, I like it. You're right. Cause I've only really scratched the surface with mine, but even just scratching the surface, everything I know so far and everything I've read about me and my human design is, it makes you kind of go, oh, that is me, which of course it would be if it's your own personal human design based on you and how you come into the world and what time and place it was. And of course it's going to be me, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. So yeah, I just love describing it that way. And essentially what you get when you put in your details, so, you know, you can go to anywhere on the internet really that gives you a free body graph, free human design body graph. And yeah, it will come out with a chart and then you'll get a load of words. And unfortunately, at this stage, this is where people go, well, I don't understand what that is. And then they don't look at it again, or they'll, you know, maybe come back to it another time, because it does look odd and it is very, very complicated. And the human design system definitely uses words in the English language that are a bit odd and mean something different in human design to what they mean in the normal dictionary. So yeah, that's where interpreters like myself will come in and help you understand your chart a bit more.
Interpreters, I like that. that is right, you've hit the nail on the head with it, because I opened mine when I first did it a long time ago and thought, great, that's colourful and there's lots of lines. And then it gave me some brief overview of what bits and pieces meant. And I was like, okay, good. And then it was a lot to look at myself.
Yeah.
So to have people like you, yeah, who can interpret it and explain it and then explain how it applies to you mm-hmm. and your life. That's the key thing for me, is understanding how my human design makes me function as a human being.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that's like the key sort of, one of the key issues actually that we have in the human design system is that it's so out there and so strange and so unique that yes, you can learn it, but actually you need to then put it into practice and you need to, you know, embody it. And it doesn't take just like, you know, one night or one reading or 1 week, 1 month, etc. It is literally a lifetime of learning who you are using the human design system. So if you choose to, you can get a lot out of it.
Okay, let's dig into that a little bit. So when you say you take it and you embody it,
mm-hmm.
Can you give some kind of brief examples of what you mean by that? Just because for me, I know that I opened the chart and went, great, that explains who I am. And then it took somebody to say, and if you did this with it,
mm-hmm.
You can do that and you'll have these outcomes. So can you give us some examples or?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the beauties of the human design system is that because it's showing you a map of who you are at your core, it's also showing you where you've been conditioned by society, parents, teachers, you know, media, social media, etc. And sometimes we might think we are somebody, or we might think we are good at something, but maybe not so much. And maybe our wisdom and our real key magic and talent are actually, you know, somewhere else. And it takes a lifetime of, you know, like uncovering this information about us sometimes to realize actually we're quite good at something else. So I kind of like to describe it as like a deconditioning tool. So it kind of helps you to understand, you know, where maybe you've been playing small all your life, maybe where you are actually a leader and you didn't realize it, maybe where you're creative and you didn't realize it. So it just helps you to bring in that, you know, that conscious awareness of yourself a little bit deeper. And, you know, we can talk a little bit more about this actually, because this is going to be the main focal point of the conversation. But embodiment really of the human design system is actually that connection to your body, right? So in the human design system, one of the things that you learn straight away is your unique decision-making process. Okay, so we call it the inner authority, or the authority if you're looking at your new human design chart right now, if you're listening to me. So where it says authority, that is your unique decision-making process. And actually, you know, we won't be able to go through all the authorities today because there's quite a lot of them, but the authorities generally are areas of our life where instead of making decisions through logic or strategy or fear, because, you know, sometimes we make decisions from, you know, like a fear-based place, missing out, that kind of thing. Instead of doing that with our ego minds, we actually make decisions using our most intelligent part of us, which is our body. which is that real sort of like subconscious, you know, sort of like awareness of what we have about ourselves. So that decision-making process is a bodily function, basically. So we start to connect to our bodies and we start to use what we call in the human design system, we're going to live our lives through our strategy and our authority. So every person has a unique strategy to live by, and everybody has a unique decision-making process as well. And that is where we start to really start to embody that our charts, our human design, our uniqueness. So yeah.
Cool. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And this is why I wanted to talk to you and bring you on the podcast, because there's two things there. For everything we do in an intuitive eating and body confidence space here, all the work we do here is based around how we feel and what we think and all the beliefs that we have historically. Like you say, all the things that we grow up with, the messages we learn, the environment around us, our availability to food, that sort of thing. We learn all this stuff and we're never really given the option to just be our own person, eat in a way we want to eat, live in a way we want to live, feel how we want to feel about ourselves. And in talking to you, I thought that there would be a way to link the human design system into how we approach eating and how we feel about, you know, the way we live our lives in our bodies. And I'd love to just get into that and start linking the two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you're right. You know, everything, you know, that we have here today in this moment has been the sum of conditioning, right? All the words that people say about us, all the actions that we've been told to do. And obviously some of us are more conditioned than others. And I will put my hand up and say, I was very, very conditioned before I found the human design system, and you as well. Yeah. It's, you know, it's all, everything that we do today, every micro decision that we make. And when I say micro decision, it's like, you know, what are we putting on our mouths, or like, you know, what are we drinking? Are we sitting down? Are we standing up? You know, those little tiny decisions every single moment of the day, they're all driven by conditioning. So, and it's very difficult in this society, especially with social media, when there's so much misinformation, and the information that's out there is very much, this is my way, do it my way, and you will be okay. And the human design system is literally a great tool to understand that actually each person has a different way of doing something, or a different way of digesting, or a different way of, you know, moving, you know, somebody's body. So learning the individuality of yourself, you're going to be different to that person that's the influencer on social media that's telling you, you know, you should do this and you should do that. And this is why your authority should only ever come from you and yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. I spend such a lot of time saying to people, you know, the people on the internet, they're not you. The people that you are trying to be like, they're not you. And the way they live their lives, the food that they eat, the way that that interacts in their bodies, that everything about them is not you. And the freedom comes from knowing who you are, what your preferences are, how you like to eat, how you like to move, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's real freedom in taking control of that and saying, no, this is me and this is the way I'm going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So where do we start? It's a massive topic, isn't it? Where do you want to start? How can tell people how we can start to do this?
Yeah. Okay. So I think really that start is learning your decision-making process, right? Because 50% of the world have what we call emotional authority, right? And this is you, yourself, Terry. So with the emotional authority, this is basically someone who has a wave of an emotion. So, you know, you might be feeling really high and then really low, and you'll go through waves. And for you, what's happening, what your body is doing, is it is taking a 360 degree look at everything, at the decision, and you're coming to a decision after a certain period of time, once you have looked at the decision in all angles. So we say with you guys, with big decisions. So when I say big decisions, I mean, you know, who to live with, who to bond with, where to live and what to do for work. So like really big decisions here. And we always say, just to make sure that you don't make a decision in the moment, right? You need to sleep on it, that kind of thing. When it comes to like intuitive eating, though, what we can do here is we can take a look, and it would be really interesting to understand from your perspective, Terry, having the emotional authority, is we can actually take a look at bringing emotions into this sort of, I guess, like the decision-making process of you, what you want to eat, depending on, you know, how it's going to make you feel, you know, before and after. So talk to me a little bit about how you do this in your life.
Okay, so the types of foods that I choose are very much based on texture and how it feels in my mouth. Mm. For a lot of people, that'll sound strange. But for me, there's a lot of how it's going to physically feel as it's going into my body, and how the textures feel to me. To me, textures are far more important than a logical, do I need some carbs?
Mm-hmm.
How much food do I need? It's all about the sensation of it for me. So for me to link that into my emotions is going to look like, if I am low, if I'm sad, if I'm tired, I want something soft and mushy and probably warm and comforting. And if I am upbeat and cheerful and feeling good and energized, then that's probably going to be something juicy, something a bit lighter in texture, maybe something that is a bit easier to eat. So yeah, the emotional links are definitely there in the food choices.
Yeah. I love that connection that you've made as well. And I think, you know, with you guys, with the emotional authority, there is some emotional regulation that has to happen, because even though we do go through periods of our lives where, you know, it might be really, really good or really, really not good, you can be really, really high and really, really low, right? But just generally, you shouldn't really be, you know, too high or too low too often, you know, that real big switch in between the two. And I think, you know, we can also relate that to eating as well, in the sense that just having this awareness that you are an emotional being, and that's okay, because, you know, it is fine to be emotional in this world, even though we've been told that it's not good to be emotional. So even though we have these emotions, it's like having the conscious awareness of that and knowing I'm really high right now, I'm in a high wave. What do I need to be aware of right now in terms of what I want to eat? Right. And it's the same with the low wave as well. Cause, you know, like a lot of people sort of, you know, they'll get into the low wave and then they'll, you know, just go and eat all the things that are going to actually make them a bit worse, right?
Yeah.
So that conscious awareness of your wave is going to really help in this situation, I think, to just know, right, I'm in a low wave right now. What do I love? What really, really, really comforts me in my low wave, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't have it, you see. So I'm literally speaking from my intelligence of the human design system rather than the embodiment of it. So yeah. That's kind of like the majority of people, the 50% of the world that have the emotional authority. But there are other authorities in this world, and, you know, a lot of it is to do with sort of like a gut instinct and also an intuition as well. And I think, you know, this is where intuitive eating can really come in, because if you can tap into your intuition and you can tap into the gut awareness, that gut instinct of, do I want this? Yes or no? And your body will tell you the answer. Then actually that is going to help you to make a decision of whether you're putting the right food in your mouth, you know, for you, without the guilt, right?
Mm.
So
yeah, absolutely, without the guilt. That's absolutely key, isn't it? Because I think once you start involving things like guilt, you then change the decisions that you make. Mm-hmm. And then you're no longer being intuitive about your eating. You're eating based on thoughts and feelings given to you by yeah. other people again.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like in the human design system, there are what we call sacral beings. So manifesting generators and generators. So obviously you're a manigen, and you guys have this gut instinct. Okay. So for you, it's really important to be asked yes or no questions, because your body will be able to give you an answer. Yes. In which case you might feel a bit lit up, a bit light, a bit happy. Or you might have a no, and it'll be just heavy, and maybe you might withdraw away from it. And that yes or no question there for you is going to be integral to the way that you choose your food, especially in a restaurant, right, where you've got, you know, lots of choice. But it's funny, actually, because when I explain how that sacral response works to people, I do use the decision-making process of food, basically. So, you know, I say to people that a lot of people, like their spouse or their partner, might say to them, what do you want for dinner tonight? But to a sacral being, they don't know.
It's like, no, that's the worst.
Yeah, it's too much, right? Mm-hmm. Or not enough. There's not enough choice there. But if you turn around to a sacral being and you say, do you want pizza for dinner tonight? You will have a bodily reaction to that. Yeah. And you'll go, no. Or you might say yes. And if you say yes, you don't need to be feel guilty about the fact that you want pizza tonight, because your body said yes to it.
Yes. Yes. That is it. That is me to a T.
Yeah.
It is a standing joke that if I am too hungry, or if I've eaten, so one of the two, I can't decide what I want to eat anymore, because firstly, I don't have decisions in front of me to make. And secondly, who knows? There's a world of stuff. Just give me a couple of options. Just mm-hmm. like you say, ask me if I want pizza. I will say yes or I will say no.
Yeah.
And actually, that works through my whole food choices,
mm-hmm.
the whole of my food choices. That is when it comes to the textures and things that I was mentioning as well. It is a very easy, do I want something soft? Yes. No. Do I want something crunchy? Yes. It's yeah. very much at play. Yeah. I yeah. understand that completely. What about the people who don't have that response though? Do they kind of go, well, I can't do that, and that's it. Done deal.
So yeah, there's about 30% of the world that doesn't have that response. And I'm actually one of those included. So, here we've got people who are maybe splenic authority, which is my authority, and that is intuitive. Okay, so you can be either a projector or a manifester to have splenic authority. And this is literally like your intuition. And unfortunately, intuition is a very quiet whisper. So if you are surrounded by noise, not just noise, but energy, you know, big energies around you, it's very difficult to hear that whisper sometimes. So it's quite difficult occasionally to make decisions. In a restaurant, I can be very good at making a decision, actually, because I will look down the menu and it will just go, ping, that's what I want. So nice. That's really amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that? Do you think it's because the noise is shut out when you're focusing on the menu? What is it that does that? If you're so affected by the noise?
Yeah. I think when there's like a menu And I know, so like, basically I'm a non-sacral being and I'm surrounded by sacral energy, right? And what I'm doing is I'm not only taking in that sacral energy, which is beautiful, by the way, but I'm also amplifying it as well. So that's what I mean about it being noisy. So if I'm in a restaurant, I guess really I can use my sort of projector, sort of focused aura to really focus on that menu and go through it, and then it will ping, right? Because of the focus. So I guess really that's the way that I can block out that noise and that energy. So maybe a focus actually would be quite good for people who are non-sacral. Yeah. This is just coming up out of me just as we talk.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So interesting.
For sure. There are other authorities. They are a lot rarer than the ones we talked about today. And the thing is that I would say, as a human design expert, is that I would probably want to look at the body graph as a whole, as well as the authority. So I won't go into detail about them today, because it's very, I think for me, I'm very passionate about making sure that the body graph as a whole is looked at. So yeah, I've gone through the main ones. About 90% of the world I've gone through right now. So hopefully, fingers crossed, most people will be covered.
they can fit themselves into that. Well, no, not fit themselves into that. I didn't mean that.
They're resonating. Yeah, that's right. Good. Yeah, we don't want to fit people into boxes, do we? But it does happen, and it even happens in the human design system, right? But yeah, we want to try and get away from fitting people into boxes for sure.
Okay, so we've had an overview of the authority. What else in the human design system do we need to look at?
So there is some stuff in deep in your human design chart that can help you with health. Okay. Ooh. And the caveat to this is that ideally, and this is according to the International Human Design School, which is where I'm qualified, ideally you do need to be using the human design system and what we call experimenting with it on a regular basis. So this isn't really something that, you know, if you came to me now and you had a reading, you know, and you haven't heard of human design before, and if I say to you, oh, you know, do this in terms of your eating or your environment or something like that, I'm not saying that it would make a huge difference to you. It might, you don't know. So that's the little caveat to it. But basically, in the human design system, there is something called the primary health system. Okay, it's not talked about that much unless you are actually, you know, what we call a PHS sort of expert, or a variables expert. They're one and the same. And the primary health system actually comes from the arrows that are at the top of your body graph. So all it is 4 arrows. So they look really insignificant, and it doesn't look like much data can come from them. But actually, the human design system has this weird layering system where they, you know, there's a top level thing, and then there's another layer and another layer and another layer. And there's literally like 4 layers going on here. So the primary health system can help you understand 2 things really for your health in general, in terms of like your actual physical health. One is something that I really personally am really passionate about and I really love, and that is the environment that you are designed to digest food in. Okay. So when we have a good digestive system, life is easier, right? I don't know if you've ever had digestive issues, but I certainly have.
Yes.
Yeah. Life is easier, right? When we have a good digestive system. And this part of that, of your chart, it's not just digestion of food. It's how you digest life as well. But when you're told what your environment is and you start again experimenting with whether this is going to help you or not, it can occasionally, or quite often, be quite transformational for people. This isn't a problem that people say this, but a lot of sort of health coaches, etc., out there do talk about how it's very good to be very calm when you're digesting, right, when you're eating. Yeah. Now, yeah. Funnily enough, I have what we call a calm digestion from my human design system. So their advice is great for me. So yes, it's good for me to be calm and, you know, to, you know, not eat too fast and to just be, you know, maybe not have too much noise or music going on. That's great for me. However, you can also get the opposite of calm, which is nervous. Okay. So you can actually have somebody who can sit there in a bustling, busy, crowded, noisy environment. And that's actually good for their digestive system. Right.
Whoa,
and when you find out about this, it's like, oh my gosh, all those times that the health coaches told me that I had to do this and I'm actually doing it incorrectly.
Yeah, that is a little bit crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I know what my preferred place and kind of setting is to eat. I know how I like it to be.
Okay.
I want it to be silent. Mm-hmm. I want a little bit of something going on, but I also don't want to feel like everybody's on top of me and it's all very busy and noisy.
Yeah.
So to think that that actually can affect your actual digestion as well is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually have problems eating in big, crowded, noisy areas. I can actually feel my body tense up. It's like part of like the anxiety that I have in my body with these, you know, all the noise that's going on. And it takes my nervous system a while. Last time I did it, I was in London a couple of weeks ago for a conference and there was 500 people there. And it took me 45 minutes to come out of that room to calm down enough to eat and to digest properly. And the best thing about it is that every single time that I have been to a conference in London, I have had the worst digestive issues ever, right? And then this time, the time that I took myself out and it took me 45 minutes to calm down, I didn't have any digestive issues because I was calm when I was eating.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's only through knowing yourself and knowing your chart that you would know that was, you know, a valid thing that you need to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise I would be sitting there going, well, I'm missing out. I'm, you know, not being social by eating, you know, with other people in there. You know, there's all these things going through your head of the reason why you should stay in the conference and eat. But actually, life is a lot easier when you follow your primary health system for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And what you need for yourself is self-care. That's what it is. It's self-care. So can you tell by looking, you can tell just by looking at the chart, which way this works for you? Or is this something that you really need somebody to interpret for you?
So most chart systems, like if you're listening right now and you've gone on to, I don't know, My Body Graph or Jovian Archive or something, most of them, they won't tell you. You have to have either like a paid subscription so that you can see the bigger details. Or yes, you need like a reader like me to interpret it and tell you what you are. Mm-hmm. It's not just calm and nervous. There's actually some other ones thrown in the mix as well. And, it's really interesting because like with anything with human design, it's about you going away and experimenting with it and improving your life based on the information that you receive. So I'm not telling you, oh, you know, you need to be nervous and you need to have the TV on and all this sort of stuff. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you, but it can be life-changing for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's blown my mind a little bit. I did not know about that.
So also within the primary health system is actually an awareness of the correct environment for you. And this is not just food. This is just for you in general to enjoy life. And I actually really love telling the story of a friend of mine who was born in Yorkshire. So a little bit of a Yorkshire lad, not near the sea or anywhere like that. And he found himself living most of his life in Exeter, down by the sea. And he does a lot of walking along the coast. Okay. And I pulled his human design chart. And it shows that he wants to, like, his environment essentially is shores, natural shores. And he doesn't know why he ended up down here.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, it's not just him that's done that. I know lots of other people that have done that. They've just naturally gravitated towards their natural environment. So, and I think really where environment comes in your human design, is when you're in your correct environment, you have a happier life because you feel better, and even you can breathe better sometimes as well. So one of the environments is mountains. And actually, if you have a mountains environment and you are up high in the mountains, like literally on the hills, you can breathe better. And I've heard many, many, many people tell me that they can breathe a lot better when they're up high.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's so interesting, because I know that I prefer to be very grounded, very kind of, I'm not an outdoorsy person, but I do like to be outdoors.
Yeah.
And I'm not somebody who likes to go, you know, hiking and rambling and nature hunting in whatever way that looks like. But I do get something special from being outside. So I do really kind of buy into that.
Yeah.
That there's an environment for everybody.
For everyone. Yeah. Do you know your environment?
I do not. I'm just wondering.
Just
yes,
just
I do.
Looked it up.
I've just looked.
Yeah.
I do not. Ask me again, Charlie.
Do you know what your environment is?
I do. Mine is valleys.
There we go. Yeah. So with valleys, so if you think about like what a valley is, it's like something that's, you know, going through either like a road or a river or something, going through something that then has, you know, high bits on either side. And you like being down in the valley, in the depth of the valley. So yeah, I completely see where that's coming from compared to what you said about mountains.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. You probably also feel very secure when you've got boundaries around you, potentially as well. That can kind of come in with valleys. And an urban makeup might be quite good for you as well. I mean, I think that nature is good for everyone, right? No matter, you know, who you are. Yeah. But that urban makeup might be quite suited to you. Yeah.
Definitely more of a city girl than a town, than a country bumpkin, for sure.
Yeah, there
for
we go.
Sure. I don't get the enjoyment of living out of town that I get living in town. And it's not even that I want to be in the thick of anything in particular. It's just, this is where I prefer to be. So
yeah, there we go.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So how can that also relate to your actual living space and how you feel physically within your living space? Just to explain that a little bit further, not everybody is going to move from one end of the country to the other.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not everybody can move physically to another space or have access to another space. But how can we use that to make sure that our living spaces are a much more aligned place to be?
Yeah. And yeah, I agree with you. We can't all just like live on a hut on the top of a hill, right? But we can go up there. So I have a friend who has mountains environment, and she's here in Exeter, and she has a variety of places that she can go that will get her up high. Dartmoor, you know, Holden, which, you know, if you're around here, then you'll know Holden Forest is like really high up above Exeter. So yeah, that's where she goes, and that's how she lives. But the other thing with mountains specifically, and I've heard this from a lot of people, is that if you live and work on the second floor of your building, then you will also feel absolutely good like really good as well. So, I mean, I'm actually in a second floor bedroom in my house. So this would be perfect for somebody who had mountains environments as well. And I think really it's about like interpreting all of those different environments and what that actually translates to in your day-to-day life, right? So like one of them is markets, for example. And, you know, that is basically being in a little bit of an area where it's got a little bit of hustle and bustle. There's things going on. There's like movement. There's money being exchanged. So a cafe essentially would be great. And we can't all go and work in a cafe 8 hours a day, every single day. That's just not feasible. But occasionally you can say to yourself, right, I'm going to get out and I'm going to put myself into my perfect environment and I'm going to do about a day's worth of work in 1 hour, which is, by the way, what I do. And then, you know, you're all set because you feel great. So yeah, it's about kind of interpreting it and what's good for you when you hear about your human design environment.
Yeah. When you put it in terms of work and things, it is without a doubt, when you're in a place that you feel better, you're going to be more productive. You're going to make different choices. You're going to, just going to go about your day differently, aren't you?
Yeah.
I feel exactly. Like I'm just echoing everything you said, but I'm trying to kind of agree with it and process it as you're talking. Yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, we can also talk a little bit about movement as well, if you want to, if that's somewhere you want to go.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So with the human design body graph specifically, so you know, when you run your chart, you get this kind of like weird looking like body. So, you know, the head's at the top. With the, what we call definition within that chart, so this is the colored in bits, you can actually start to piece together what is good for you movement wise, right? And people who have some strong definition at the bottom of the chart that is potentially either connected to the splenic center, which is the intuition, or connected to some of the, what we call the motor centers, which are centers that create energy. This is actually where it's quite important for movement to happen if you have that in your chart. So especially if you've got the very bottom one colored in, the root center, it's very important for you to be able to move, right? And the movement doesn't have to be, like I do, going to the gym and lifting weights. It can simply be walking. So those of us who have jobs or businesses that require us to be sitting in front of a screen most of the day, actually, when you have a look at your chart, what we need to do is we need to add in some light exercise throughout the day. So for example, with me, I have a very small treadmill behind me. And I also have a little trampoline. They're called like rebounders or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me to get that physical energy sort of moving in my body and for me to feel really good, because I can get quite tired if I stay stagnant. Just literally getting up and walking on the treadmill for 5 minutes is the key to my success. And, you know, movement is really good for your body, for anybody's body, regardless of what they have in the human design chart. But when you look at it, sometimes I can see where that slight misalignment will come in, because I know that that person is sitting in front of the computer screen all day. And I'm like, you need to move the energy, because the energy needs to, you know, get out of your body. So yeah, another really important factor of health.
I feel so seen. Sure. I feel so seen right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you have a lot of definition, like in your motor centers, for sure. So yeah. How does that work for you? Do you move? Do you get up and move?
I do not. And I know it when I finally do move, because
yeah,
I am really bad for sitting and working and just power on through and get stuff done. And and I get into it and I get deep into it. And then hours pass by. I haven't been to the loo. I haven't even got a drink and I have not moved. And as I stand up, my whole body goes, whoa, you haven't moved for a while. It's terrible. I do not move enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's yes, Charlie, I agree with you.
I know what you mean. I've definitely been there with, you know, being a bit stagnant and like really hyper focusing on work and everything like that. And all it is conscious awareness. And, you know, you might have that conscious awareness today because of the podcast you've just listened to, but actually it's going to take you a lot of time to actually bring those new habits into your life again. When I found out my human design type, which is a projector, I found out that I needed to be aware of when enough was enough, right? So work-wise, when is enough enough? When, you know, after like 6 hours of work, have I done enough work? Yes, probably, Charlie. So stand up, you know? get yourself a drink, go to the loo, right? So this conscious awareness will come in. It will take you a long time. It took me a year to learn it. And when you finally, you know, sort of learn it, life just gets easier because you start to put in these habits that you start to think, okay, I feel better. I need to do this more. I feel better. I feel better. I feel better. And every single little micro decision comes, you know, comes into alignment for you. So, yeah.
Yeah. This is the key, isn't it? It's unwiring all the old stuff and dropping these new thoughts and habits and behaviors in. Yeah. And that's what makes the difference. I know that a lot of people, when they come to my space, they've got a bad relationship with the movement because it's been so intrinsically linked to the food that they eat for such a long time. So for a lot of people, it means that exercise is exercise and it has a purpose. It either means you burn more calories, you can eat more food. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a purpose and it is, doesn't matter if it's enjoyable or not. But I think this, the whole human design way of looking at it means that actually it's right for you. You don't have to attach it to food or, you know, earning anything or making up for anything. You can do what is good for your body because your body needs it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's so important that we understand that as well. And we understand, you know, what works for us because, you know, like I've got some, you know, good definition down at the bottom of my chart. But I only have one motor center defined, whereas you've got four. And, you know, for me, I walk 10,000 steps a day. And if I don't, I can't get to sleep at night. So the movement part of things is really, really important because it does affect everything. It affects your decision making. It affects your focus. It affects your sleep. So yeah, the movement is key and it doesn't have to be exercise that you don't like. So I love lifting weights in the gym, right? But I hate yoga. So I don't do yoga. Simple as that. I'm a spiritual person that doesn't like yoga, but that's okay.
Yeah, but you do you, isn't it? Just what is the point in pushing yourself? I have told this story on the podcast before, but I don't think I've told you. I went to a spin class once. And I went once because it was at something silly like 6 o'clock in the morning. I got there and literally within 2 minutes of it starting, I was like, I hate this. I hate this. Can I leave? Can I actually leave? Is it okay to leave? Of course it's okay to leave, but I didn't leave. I stayed there and it was horrible. Yeah. And yet my sister, in contrast, she absolutely loves spin. And I know, Charlie, she's a little bit on the crazy side. No, nor me. But it just goes to show it's horses for courses, right? It's if you enjoy it and you love it, go do it because you're going to get the benefit from it. If you don't love it and it's not movement that feels good to you and to your body, you're not going to get the benefits out of it. And by benefits, I mean, you know, we all want to grow with fit, strong, healthy bodies into old age, right?
Yeah.
And you're not going to do that if you're doing stuff you don't enjoy doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'm with you on the spin. I, even at the height of my fitness, just before lockdown, I was, you know, lifting incredible amounts of weight off the floor of the gym. But if you try and get me on a spin bike, I am like out the door. Because for me, I don't like feeling out of breath. So any exercise that has me like panting and like, you know, trying to get my breath back, I can't stand it. Which is why weights is great, because you don't really have the out of breath feeling when you lift weights. So that's why I like that.
I'm a weights girl. I'm with you. Are you? I understand that one. Yeah. Yeah, there's a real sense of anyway, it doesn't matter what there's a sense of. It's irrelevant right now.
It's strength, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm really competitive with myself.
With yourself, good. I'm glad you're competitive with yourself.
Well, with everybody, I'm competitive, but I'm really competitive even with myself. So every time I go and I lift weights, I want to lift more than I lifted last time. Yeah, I get a lot out of something like weights, whereas some people might hate it because they're like, oh, why have I got to lift this? It's awful. I'd rather go and do something gentle and lovely.
Yeah, Yeah, and I get that. And I think also women kind of fear that they will look like they're muscly if they lift a weight off the floor. I'm here to tell you, you won't. You won't look muscly. So, yeah.
No, even at the height of my fitness and my gym going time, I was going to a full-on bodybuilder's gym and being trained by somebody who trained pro bodybuilders.
Wow.
And even under that, even under those conditions and with that trainer, that was never my goal. I wanted to be strong and I wanted to be healthy. My goal was never to competitively bodybuild or anything. But I did not look muscular.
Mm.
So, you know, it takes an awful lot to get to that point. It's you're not going to get there by accident, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like it will take, unfortunately, a restrictive diet to do it, which is kind of not what we're here for.
Mm-mm. No, absolutely not. Yeah.
No.
You mentioned sleep as well. So
yep.
I had the pleasure of being at your sleep workshop the other day.
Yay.
It was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I got so much out of it.
Do you want to
touch on that a little bit? Because sleep does affect the way we approach life. It affects how we get up in the morning. It affects the food we eat, because if you're very, very tired, naturally you're going to sway towards types of foods like carbs, because your body's going to say, I need some energy, get it in.
Mm-hmm.
So a good night's sleep affects an awful lot of stuff.
Yep.
So do you want to touch on that and human design?
Yeah, of course.
By the way, you don't have to if you don't want to, because I know that this is your workshop stuff.
No, it's fine. No. I'd love to talk about sleep. I think, you know, I spoke for over an hour on the subject the other day, didn't I?
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a lot to say on it in terms of the energetics of sleep. And I did say right at the beginning of my masterclass, I said, look, I'm not touching on the science of sleep in this, because I'm not a health coach. I'm not a qualified professional in any way, shape or form. I'm literally just telling you about the energetics of it. And it's really interesting from the human design system to sort of look at a chart and understand what sleep is going to be like for someone. And, you know, there's a lot of elements that you can take a look at. I think maybe for the purpose of the podcast, I could probably go through the different sleep strategies or like evening routine strategies for each mm-hmm. different human design type. Because obviously the rest of it's, yeah. An hour long. We don't want to be here for another hour. So each human design type actually comes with its own unique sleep strategy or like evening routine strategy. And the first thing I want to say about this is that it's yet another area of your life where the experts come in and they say, you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that and you should do this and you should do that. And actually, whilst they might be right, and whilst there might be some science behind that that proves it, for each individual unique person, some of those things might be incorrect, right? So this is where I'm going to invite you again to think about if you're doing something that's right for you and it goes against that societal norm and it goes against even the science, don't worry, you do you. So let's start with the generator type. So this is generators, not manifesting generators as well. This is just generators by themselves. So you guys have got this kind of really amazing motor energy that just sort of runs and runs and runs and goes and goes and goes. So you guys will want to try and use up your energy before you go to sleep at night. So kind of sounds a little bit normal, right? I think, you know, some people in society will kind of say that anyway. The only thing is though, is that with generators, it's not necessarily working, right? So in the human design system, or just in life in general, we have different types of work, I guess, really, or different kinds of energy. There's physical energy, of course, emotional, the actual work. So maybe like, you know, mental. And we've also got spiritual energy as well. So it doesn't mean, I'm not sitting here telling you that as a generator, you need to work 12 hours a day and then fall into bed, right? Because I do not want anybody to take that from this. You still need to rest. You still need to do self-care. But just make sure that you're mixing and matching the different types of work and the different types of energy. So if you're feeling drained from your work, your mental, you know, expenditure, go and expend some of your physical energy instead, and kind of mix and match it throughout the day. So that's generators. Now, manifesting generators are kind of similar to you guys, because you also have that ability to go, go, go all the time, right? So similar sort of situation. However, you have this very unique part of you that, because you've got that definition from motor center to throat, which makes you a manifesting generator. Manifesting means someone that is able to really manifest out loud, you know, what they want, and really express their true selves as well. That part of you needs to be almost kind of like shut down before bed. Okay. So you've got this hybrid thing of, right, okay, I need to calm down, but I'm also working and, you know, the motor's still going over here. Right. And this is a very strange thing. And I feel very strange saying this all the time, but I know that you're going to say that this works for you, so it's all good. It's actually really good for you to work in bed.
It is true. It is the most bizarre thing, because I completely resonate with what you're saying. Yeah. I get into bed and I'm like, I'm really tired, but I've got things to think about and I've got things to do and I want to get this done. And so, yes, the way that I settle down at night more often than not is to get into bed,
yeah,
and sit there and cozy up and then do a bit of work. So I might have a look at my emails. I might do a bit of planning for a podcast. I might, whatever it is, I might do a little something, or even if it's learning quite often, because I'm trying to learn Spanish. Quite often I'll do some of that. And it seems to be the thing that finally makes me settle down and go to sleep. It is, you're right. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah, but if you think about, like, you know, the way that society sort of dictates how we are supposed to be, it's like, you know, put down your phone, stop doing work. I've even heard phrases like, sleep hygiene or bed hygiene, and how your bed is supposed to be the only place that you sleep. You're not supposed to do work in bed. You're not supposed to, you know, do anything else in bed. And it's just like, no, like, manifesting generators, you guys need to calm the manifest a bit down, but then still have that motor running with the work. So yeah, it's very unusual, but
I can't imagine. I can't. No, I don't want to try it. Oh, I hope you don't mean me, because I hope you're talking to the other manifesting generators
of the
world. The
other manifesting generators, yeah.
Good, because I thought you were trying then to tell me to get into bed in a very kind of clinical space with no devices, nothing to do, just sit there.
Just sit there. I know, exactly. It just doesn't work, does it?
Does not work, no.
No. So those are the sacral beings that we've got in human design. So the other three are what we call non-sacral. So these are projectors, manifestors, and reflectors. And essentially, because we're non-sacral, it means that throughout our day, we are coming into contact with that sacral energy all the time. And I mentioned earlier that when we're in aura with sacral energy, we do amplify it. So sometimes we might even appear like the most buzzy, you know, on the go people ever, because we're amplifying it, basically. Now, it's very difficult for us to sleep when we're like surrounded by that sacral energy. So for the three types that are non-sacral, it's very, very important that we essentially de-sacral ourselves from sacral energy before we sleep. So take yourself off and be alone an hour before bed, and just calm yourself down. Do whatever it is that you want to do. Doesn't matter whether it's, you know, something like meditation that you're supposed to do, because all the sleep experts say that you're supposed to meditate. Or, you know, you can do, you know, anything really, like watch Netflix or read a book or play games. And this can kind of really help you. So us non-sacrals, we are supposed to go to bed before we're tired, okay? And that is the key. If we go to bed when we're tired, we will wake up feeling like we haven't slept, okay? So always go to bed before you're tired. Another little trick to the projector as well, just because this is like part of my story. Because we have the focus and penetrating aura that really hones in and focuses, it's actually very good for us to focus on something whilst we're trying to get to sleep. And, you know, for me, that looks like having my iPad 3 inches in front of my face, right? So I'm lying there with my iPad on my arm. And then when I know that I'm kind of like drifting off to sleep, I know that it just sort of like goes down the bed and sort of ends up, you know, half on the floor, half on something else down there. And I just fall asleep that way. And I've done that ever since I was 10 years old. I've literally had to focus on something to then be able to fall asleep. Now, if I focused on something that I have never seen before, I can't sleep because I'm wanting to know what the outcome is of, you know, whatever it is that's happening. But if I'm just having a look at something like Friends or Scrubs or anything that's kind of like been on repeat in my life for a long, long, long time, then I can fall asleep within the first episode, basically. And yeah, it's a great sleep tip, but not if you're a health coach, because health coaches would never say to have an iPad in front of your face.
What? With all that bright light and all this stuff that's hitting your brain? It's another example, isn't it, of where the whole one size fits all gets rolled out. You Yep. must go to sleep like this. You must not do this in bed. You must eat like this. You must have 8 hours sleep a night. And, Mm-hmm. you know, and so it goes on.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's really important for you to find what works for you, because, you know, I might die of cancer in 20 years time because of all the electronic waves and whatnot going through my body because of that. But at least right now I have 8 hours sleep every single night. And I love my life because of it. So.
Well, actually, when you say it like that, you think, oh, hang on. Now, would I trade, you know, X amount of years of my life? But actually, if you look at it the other way around, if you are not doing those things and not getting good sleep, then we also know that the health impacts of not sleeping well are many and varied and can be quite debilitating. So surely it just makes sense to find a way to go to sleep and get a good night's sleep that suits you rather than thinking about what it might or might not look like 20, 30, 40 years down the line.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. And you're right. Like, if I wasn't getting very good sleep right now, what other health concerns would I have? So yeah, sometimes it's going to have to be a toss up, doesn't it? But yeah, I love my sleep. I get 8 hours a night. All good.
That's brilliant. Oh, there's not a lot in the world more satisfying than a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you would like to touch on?
Gosh, I think I've touched on a lot today. We've been talking for a while, haven't we? Mm. Yeah. Honestly, like, you know, the human design system, especially the chart, it should be looked at as a whole, like as a holistic view. So even though we touched on like the main points, I think really when it comes to health, intuitive eating, you know, that kind of thing, you know, that would just have to be looked at as a, you know, as a whole. So I haven't got anything else right now to add, because we've had the most amazing conversation, haven't we?
We really have covered a lot. I can't believe I'm just looking at the time and I can't believe how quickly it's gone and how much has flown by and how much we've squeezed into the conversation. Okay, tell people where they can find you and what you can help them with.
Cool. Okay, so I do like hanging out on Instagram more than anything else, so you can find me at the Charlie Garnham. And yeah, any questions, I'm more than happy to answer or, you know, have a chat with you. I absolutely love talking about human design. Everybody always says to me, oh, Charlie, you light up when you talk about human design. And I'm like, yeah. Why do you think I was invited? Yeah. So yes, come and have a chat with me. I do hang out on Facebook as well. So yeah, please, find me on Facebook if you want, you know, to have a chat on there instead. And I also have my website, which is charliegarnham.com. And, at the time of publishing, I will have a new website. So it's very, very exciting. I actually do a lot of work around leadership with human design as well. And really that kind of stems from helping women to understand where they've had that good girl conditioning and how they can start to decondition to really step into that leadership, you know, sort of like embodiment of their leadership that they're destined to do. So I do help quite a lot of business owners to come out of that nitty gritty sort of, you know, do in their business, slow down to speed up, and to get out there as impactful leaders. So that's the area of human design that I love to focus on. You can come and have a reading with me. Now, if you have a reading with me based on the conversation we've talked about today, that's absolutely fine. I can talk about anything in the reading you want. We can talk about leadership. We can talk about health. We can talk about food. We can talk about this. Doesn't matter. I don't mind. We can talk about anything in your reading. So just let me know. And yeah, we can do a reading together and I can tell you all about the amazing magic in your chart and yeah, what's holding you back as well, which is, I think, one of the key things sometimes with human design.
Yeah. It's so interesting. It's very addictive. You won't want to stop when you start. And also, I will just say, Charlie's Instagram, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I love the stories. I love your stories because it is little snippets. I'm always learning new stuff about human design from your stories. And you've got a really nice way of explaining things and putting things across. So yeah, definitely, definitely one to follow.
Awesome. Sure. Yay. Thank you so much, Terry. Oh. It's been lovely connecting with you. Like you and I have been having little chats and everything for quite a few months now, haven't we?
Yeah.
So it's been great to connect with a beautiful manifesting generator like yourself. And the sacral being and the projector, they go quite well together. They always make really good collaboration partnerships, etc. So yeah, it's good to have some money gens in my life.
Yes. When you were talking about the leadership, I was thinking, there's future conversation to be had here.
There we go.
Oh, Charlie, thank you. I've had such a great time talking to you.
Yeah,
I know
too.
That everybody's going to get such a lot out of it. And so thank you very much.
Good. Yay. Thank you, Terry. See you soon.